Oscars than Martin Scorsese.
Who?
Billie Eilish. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Everyone outside and in between.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Same with, okay, now we can say that about Chris Nolan. We can say that about Emma Stone. We can say it about lots of people.
And only one of the songs were deserving to win best. I'll leave it there.
And it was What Was I Made For? That song rips.
It was. It's not obvious. I'm not saying that Skyfall Part 3 should have won best song. I'm still mad about that.
Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. That's a very long conversation. Oh, have we said it? No, we didn't. You say the thing. I'm sorry.
I said the thing. We did the thing.
Everyone outside in between.
Welcome back. It's Oscar. Sorry. It's the Monday after the Oscars. Give us a moment.
It's the Oscar brain. This is a very long conversation about movies and art and TV and whatever else we feel like talking about. My name is Sam Bannigan.
And I am Andrew Thomas. Sam Bannigan, how are you? How was your week? How was your Oscar Sunday?
Yeah, my week was pretty decent. Working, and playing lots of Helldivers. Helldivers is really good. Playing lots of Prince of Persia. Prince of Persia is also very good. And yeah, now it's another week, and I gotta do laundry. I have chores I gotta do. It's like a chore day. I'm done this. Yeah, well, yesterday was Oscars day, so I had to, and I had to watch Killers of the Flower Moon for 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And I had like a 30-minute phone call with Justin, which was nice. And then I had to go see the Oscars, so it was like, I don't really have time to do chores, so I'm going to do chores today, right after we're done this. I'm going to eat, and then I'm going to do chores. But yeah, it's a pretty good week all around, I would say. Nothing too crazy. How was your week?
My week was pretty good. Pretty good week, can't complain. I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, I felt like I've just done a lot this week. I mean, last Monday I was in Toronto, right?
This is true.
Then, yeah, work, comedy. Done a lot of comedy this week, so big ups on that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, good week. Saw the Oscars, happy with a lot, mad with others, but
Paul was not gonna win.
I'm glad I didn't go. There was a part of me that wanted to go to New Jersey to bet on Paul, because I was like, we're gonna get an upset, it's gonna be Paul.
But no,
it's going to be Robert Downey Jr., Divine Joy Randolph, Lily Gladstone, and Paul Giamatti.
No.
No. Who did Martin Scorsese make mad? He made two in-depth, deep personal masterpieces, and they were both nominated for 10 Oscars. And they both got 0 Oscar wins. The Irishman and Flower Moon.
I mean, what was Irishman up against? Because I feel like that was a good year. And I also don't like The Irishman. So.
You don't like The Irishman. It was the Parasite year. So fine.
Oh, it's Parasite. Are you kidding me? It's Parasite. Of course it's going to go to Parasite. You're telling me Parasite doesn't deserve to win over The Irishman? Parasite is so good, Andrew.
They're both very good movies. This is where film just becomes subjective, right?
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, Marty's great. We all know Marty's great.
Give Marty his flowers!
Yeah. It was just... I feel like his last couple of movies have just kind of come out in like the time where it's like, this is so good. There's just the moment in time that this is coming out, there's something else that like takes over the consciousness of like art this people. Year. Yeah.
I get that, but not one, not a production design, not a costume, not a nothing.
No, because poor
not a best actress.
The best actress is crazy.
That one she won the SAG.
She won so much.
Everyone was like, Killian won the SAG, Andrew. How do you feel about that? And last year I was like, Colin Farrell won. You never know. Oscar for Paul.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll go through our little Oscar thoughts before we get into Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, overall, I gotta say, great show.
Overall, great show. That I'm Just Ken performance is bonkers good.
It was well-paced. I liked the show more this time than last year.
Yes, I did too.
I'm a big fan of getting your peers to go on stage and have a little, like, oh, this is why they're great. This is why Sally Field's talking about Emma Stone and
I Christoph Waltz. That.
You don't like that?
I just be... because knowing how the Oscars kind of work of like the campaigns and the talking to people and blah, blah, blah. For all those acting awards, it's kind of like, yeah, it's going to be like this person.
Yes.
Maybe this other person, but it's probably going to be this person. So then you have five people up there who all know who, like, they don't know who's going to win until the envelope gets open, but they all know who's going to win. Pretty much.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, we're going to hype you up and you're going to stay in your seat. And I think the only person who like got that was Robert De Niro, because he looked so tired.
He did. He really looked like...
he was ready to go home.
Hey, Rob, I'm not going to win. I don't want to go. Yeah. Don't you want to support Lily? Marty's going to be there. You gotta see some pals you haven't seen all year.
Yeah.
Remember the pandemic? Remember when we didn't get to do this? Come on.
Come on.
Fine. It really looked like his response. He registered fine in the RSVP.
Yeah.
Sigh, fine. All right. I guess he's coming.
All right. I guess he's on his way. So it just felt kind of weird. Like, I was like, yeah, I appreciate that these people are getting to, you know, be like, hey, this is why we all love this person. But it just, because 2 seconds after they're done, one person wins an award. It's just very, it just feels very weird.
Yeah.
Always... I feel like that sort of, I know, I understand why they don't do it, but I feel like that sort of thing would feel better for like the nominations when like those come out, where it's like, hey, we're going to have a couple people just like say how good you are at your thing. And also, here's your Oscar nomination. Like, congrats. Like, this is why you deserve this. Here it
imagine.
Is. And now someone else is going to win. But
imagine, you know, Margot Robbie waiting for a nomination. Yeah, ba 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 ba. And Annette Bening. Thank you. Everyone else can go home. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Everyone says such nice things about all five people who are nominated. Everyone else. Bye-bye.
Yeah. So I didn't love that. I also just love a good Oscars clip.
Yeah.
You know, that quick little, here's like, you know, a couple lines from a scene that's just really good. I like that.
Yeah.
But anyway. Want to do a quick rundown through all these awards?
Of course.
The cutest and best dressed winners, the visual effects team for Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, I thought you were about to break out red carpet. I was
no.
Like, okay, Sam.
No,
this
no,
is
no.
All you.
No. The Godzilla Minus One team, they were all wearing Godzilla heels. and that shit fucking rips. That's so cool.
Have you seen it
yet? They seem so high. No, I haven't, but I love these people so much. They had all their Godzilla toys. They fucking, they're the best.
I love that guy who was trying to pull out a speech, and he had Godzilla and the Oscar in his hand. He said, here, take Godzilla, take Godzilla.
Take Godzilla. It's so good, dude. Yeah, they're just great.
Beautiful movie in every phrase. Beautiful to look at and beautiful to watch.
Andrew, we got so many.
We gotta talk about a 3.5 hour movie.
Let me just hit these. Best sounds. Zone of interest.
I forgot. Just go through them.
What do you fucking think I'm doing?
Ones. Just do the big ones. Don't.
No, because we gotta do all. We gotta do. Okay. All right. Best film editing. Oppenheimer for which it was very nice. I think Jennifer Lane's great. Production design. Poor Things. Original score. The homie Ludwig Göransson. Oppenheimer. Original song, What Was I Made For? Makeup and hair, Poor Things. Costume design, Poor Things. Cinematography, Oppenheimer, Hoyt van Hoytema. That was sick. Documentary short, Last Repair Shop. Live action short, Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Also Wes Anderson's first Oscar, which is wild for his weird little short movie. Best animated short is War Is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. International feature was Zone of Interest. Also shout outs to Jonathan Glazer for the one winner who actually mentioned the Palestinian stuff in his speech, which was very nice. Thank you, John.
Have you seen Zone of Interest?
I have not seen it.
Ah, it's good. You should check it out.
I know. Documentary feature, 20 Days of Mariupol. Animated feature, Boy and the Heron, which I haven't seen, but heard nothing but good things from all the people who love Miyazaki and Ghibli in general.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either. Hopefully I'll see it this week, but I don't think so.
Yeah, so many things. Original screenplay, Anatomy of a Fall, which was very lovely. That screenplay is phenomenal.
It's a great screenplay.
Yeah. Makes sense. I wish I'd gone to Past Lives. I just want Past Lives to see get something, but I get it. Adapted screenplay, American Fiction, which was also kind of surprising, but also a great speech from Cord Jefferson. The shout outs of make 10 $20 million movies or $54 million movies instead. And I was like, hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
That was really nice. Dave Vine, Joy Randolph for The Holdovers, winning Best Actress in a Supporting Role.
Great. Well-deserved. Have you seen The Holdovers yet? No, you haven't.
No, because we haven't. Have we done it for the podcast?
You have leisure time.
Andrew, you have time for leisure. I don't like re-watching movies like you do. I like watching the movie, doing a podcast, and then not watching it for like a very long time.
You have leisure time. That's what I'm saying.
But we're going to do The Holdovers like next week. So why would I watch it this week and then rewatch it next week? Because it's the Oscars. I'm not doing that. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to watch a movie twice in 2 weeks. When it's not like one of my favorite things in the world. Okay?
I'm just saying.
So shut the fuck up.
I'm just saying.
Shut the fuck up. I don't just like sit there on my Apple TV and fucking go to, I just want to watch this one scene. I just want to watch this one scene. Oh man, look at how Batman punches that guy. That's crazy.
Yeah, you just watch YouTube clips.
That's you. Robert Downey Jr. got Best Supporting Actor. Also a phenomenal performance. We've talked about it.
We have.
This is basically Chris Nolan winning an Oscar for acting, which is fun.
Yes, very much so.
The upset of the evening, Emma Stone getting Best Actress in the leading role.
I hate so much that I like Emma Stone quite a lot, especially after watching Poor Things, but both times she's won Best Actress, I have been annoyed. Both times! Two times!
Yeah. But she's so good in Poor Things. But it's just not Lily Gladstone. It's so wild.
Yeah, I think
it's so weird.
I even, because Kelly and I were talking, I think even outside of the historic aspect, even outside of my love for Martin Scorsese, I do think she gave the best performance. It's so much of a, the entire three, and we'll get into it. Her performance in the movie, her humanity carries it. It's it's her. Again, we're going to talk about it so much more later, but...
Yeah, it's just such a gorgeous performance from Lily Gladstone. And, yeah, I was very surprised. And it looked like Emma Stone was also very surprised. She looked like she was just like, oh yeah, I'm just going to sit here and Lily's going to get up and it's going to be great. And then they said, Emma Stone, and she was like,
we can't go another year without a white woman. I mean, who are we?
Yeah, who are we? Progressive? Crazy.
Sorry, Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, sorry. Best actor in a leading role, Cillian Murphy. The boy, the homie. No Sunshine Reunion, but I get it.
Yeah, no Sunshine Reunion. Crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure they met. They hung out later.
In your dreams.
We just didn't get to see it.
In your dreams, they were at In-N-Out together.
In my dreams, they went to the after party together, and they chatted, and they were like, oh my god, look at how far we come. This is so nice. Remember doing Sunshine? That was crazy. And now we both have Oscars. That's so nice. Anyway, Cillian Murphy, best dude. Love that guy.
Best dude.
Best dude. best directing, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer. Woo! He did it.
He did it. He made it. Steven Spielberg gave him the Oscar.
It was very sweet. It was very nice. Also really liked the... He made a thing in his speech, the comment of, imagine being 100 years into painting or theater.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, yeah. Our movies are a very young art form. This is crazy. So, yeah, who knows what's going to happen?
Yes, indeed.
But, yeah, wild.
And it looks like, to my eyes...
What?
That's what Al Pacino said.
Oh, yes. My eyes see Oppenheimer. best picture, Oppenheimer. God, Al Pacino was so weird up there.
I love him. I love my old man. My old man.
He's the oldest man.
Al Pacino.
He's the oldest man. Yeah, Oppenheimer, best picture. Fantastic wins. Yeah, other than Emma Stone, which I really like her performance in Poor Things. She's so good in Poor Things. As I said on this podcast, I love her performance in that movie. But Lily Gladstone is so good in Killers of the Flower Moon. It's the weirdest win, but it's, yeah. Anyway, everything else I was like, yeah,
it's not undeserving. That is.
It's not undeserving. It's not an undeserving win. It's just not Lily Gladstone.
This year's Jamie Lee Curtis, if you will.
Absolutely this year's Jamie Lee Curtis. But yeah, other than that, I thought the show was really good. I loved all the performances. I loved all the wins that I knew that I've seen the movies of, and I was like, oh hell yeah, this is great. And yeah, the I'm Just Ken performance was 12 out of 10. Saw it on the big screen. It was great.
Oh really? Where did you watch the Oscars?
At the Metro Theater. It's like the little indie theater here. They do like a fundraiser for the theater, and they put on they like stream the Oscars onto the big screen, and you can buy popcorn and booze, and there's like ballots and bingo cards and all this fun little stuff.
Cool. All the musical performances were really good.
They were. Did you know that one of them is from a movie called Flamin' Hot?
Of course, Flamin' Hot.
Which is about the Flamin' Hot Cheetos?
Yes.
I didn't know this.
You can stream it on Hulu.
That sounds wild.
You want to know how the Hot Cheeto was made? There's a whole movie about it. An Academy Award nominated movie about it.
Apparently. Yeah, really wild.
This episode of Welcome Back is sponsored by Flamin' Hot Frito-Lay.
Flamin' Hot Cheetos! They're like regular Cheetos, but they're Flamin' Hot. Normal Cheetos are for pussies. What? Flamin' Hot Cheetos are not for pussies, that is.
What is this?
It's a Bo Burnham bit. I thought that's what you were referencing.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's in, maybe subconsciously.
Make Happy. He does a bit where he says that that the show is sponsored by Flamin' Hot Cheetos, and then that song plays.
Dang.
So you're the crazy one, obviously.
Speaking about the crazy one, Martin Scorsese's Flowers of the Killer Moon. And like I said, Killers of the Flower Moon, you better adjust your ears. We saw it in October, and then we saw it this weekend.
Yeah, we saw it in December.
And December? Did you? This is my second time watching it. Did you watch it in December?
It was on your list.
Dang!
For Tips and Tops.
I did not watch it for Tips and Tops. That was
what?
I did not. And we were gonna do it the next week. No,
I watch all of the shit on Tips and Tops if I can.
I watch a lot of it, but I don't watch all of it.
My heart is broken.
I see the devastation. We were going to do it in like, I'm going to bring back your argument from the holdovers. We were going to do it like the next week. Why would you
watch it? I'll rewatch our Tips and Tops and then I don't have to watch it for the thing because we were recording those so close together.
So you could watch the holdovers for the Oscars.
Andrew, because we were going to record, if you remember, we were going to record Tips and Tops on a Wednesday and we were going to record Killers of the Flower Moon on the Friday. And then you said no.
I did say no.
So I watched it with enough time so that we could record the Tips and Tops on Wednesday and we could record Killers of the Flower Moon on Friday. And then you said, actually, lol, no. And then we didn't. So I had timed it because I knew that that's what we were going to do.
Okay.
So shut the fuck up. We're fighting. Apparently this is a fight.
This
episode.
Is a fight. Because Paul should have won.
We got punchy energy today.
I'm fighting on behalf of Paul and Lily. That's my anger today.
I'm fighting behind because of Lily too. Don't get me wrong. Not Paul.
Speaking of the racist fighting. What did you think of this movie?
I really love Killers of the Flower Moon. I think it's a really phenomenal film. Martin Scorsese at his best. Just keeps showing up, doing this crazy fucking good-ass movies. And yeah, just killing it across the board, really. Big fan of everything he's got going on. Powerful story, wonderful performances. Yeah, really, really lovely overall. Really just a big fan of this film. Yeah, I have thoughts, but we'll get to them. What do you think of this Killers of the Flower Moon?
Back at it again, right? The greatest to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is a movie, like all of Martin Scorsese's movies, that just kind of stay in your brain if you think about.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, since walking out of the movie, I've been just thinking about it, this entire award season, being disappointed. Yeah, it's such a beautiful film, Flowers of the Killer Moon.
Nope.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
There you go.
It's unlike anything I've really seen before. It's really, really good. Love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Do you want to start with this cast?
Yeah, let's hop into the cast.
Honestly, everyone's so good in this movie. Every performance is so lovely. I'm just going to hit a couple of the smaller roles, and then we're going to talk about our main couple people. We have William Below playing Henry Roan. I really like him. I really like his performance. He's not in the movie too much, but I just really like him.
So his brother, right?
No, that's Lily Gladstone's like ex-husband.
Oh, yes. Yes.
He's really nice.
He is really good at the movie.
I really like his performance. Mm-hmm. We have I'm going to hit the three sisters, Jillian Dion, Janae Collins, and Kara Jade Myers as Minnie, Rita, and Anna. Also, they don't have a whole lot going on in the movie, but they are really good in the movie.
Their presence is in the movie a lot.
Their presence is there, and their performances help get you across that line.
Yes.
Then we got John Lithgow showing up as the prosecutor at the end. I didn't know he was in it, and I loved seeing him, and I just loved John Lithgow.
Yes.
Also, Brendan Fraser coming in. Hot off an Oscar win. Just rolling up to a Martin Scorsese set like it's nothing.
Do you think he was too much?
No. I like the vibe of it. You know, I think it's the right kind of too much.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes, no. I feel like most of the time you would have said it's too much.
I think it's getting there. It's almost there. But maybe it's just because I really like Brendan Fraser.
I need to speak to my client. I haven't known where he was for 2 months.
You dumb boy. That's great.
He's trying to save you, you dumb boy.
It's great. Yeah. Also, who doesn't want to see Brendan Fraser yell at Leonardo DiCaprio like that? Right? That's great. Then we have fucking dad Jesse Plemons.
Dad.
Oh, there's a bit on Twitter where people always call Kristen Dunst and Jesse Plemons mom and dad.
Oh. Not mommy and daddy.
I don't know.
Not Zaddy.
No. No. Just mom and dad. There was like a picture of them at the Oscars and a bunch of people were just like, oh, it's mom and dad. They look so nice.
It's mom and dad. That's funny.
I don't know why, but I like it a lot because I do love both of them. But just like, they're just so nice.
Did you see Power of the Dog?
I did see Power of the Dog. I love Power of the Dog.
Power of the Dog was good. They were both good in it.
They're so good in it.
Yeah.
I'm like trepidatiously excited for Civil War, but they're both in that, and I'm excited to see them.
Oh, I didn't know Jesse Plemons was in it.
Oh yeah, he's in the trailer. There's a bit. So there's a in the trailer. He's like confronting the Kristen Dunst and the other journalists that she's with, and he's like in like camo, and he has like a big gun, and he's wearing these like bright pink sunglasses. And there's just a shot of him just kind of standing there looking at them, and somebody tweeted it and just put in quotes, how can that possibly be profitable for Frito-Lay? It's the joke from Game Night where he's like 3-for-1 Tostitos.
How can
that possibly be profitable for Frito-Lay?
That's funny. Oh,
it's good.
Men kind of, sometimes a single movie can ruin your entire expectations of a director.
And this is why, this is why I'm not excited about Civil War, but I'm excited about Civil War for all the other reasons.
Okay.
Mainly Kristen Dunst and Jesse Plemons.
And this is his, I think, I saw a stat that, like, this is the, like, since 2015, Jesse Plemons has been in every, at least one Best Picture movie every year. Really? Since something crazy.
Let me, I'll pull up his IMDb and we can check. Okay. So, Kills of the Flower Moon.
Yes.
2023. He was not in anything last year.
Oh, dang.
But before then, it was The Power of the Dog, Judas and the Black Messiah. I'm thinking of Ending Things, The Irishman, Vice. The Post. Wow. Yeah, this is wild. Post. Was Other People? I don't know what Other People is. And then Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies. And was he in The Master, or am I crazy?
That was 2012. When did The Master come out?
That was 2012.
He was in The Master. You are right. Yeah. Yeah, so he has been in a lot of great movies. Best Picture noms. A lot of great movies.
Good. He knows how to pick them.
He really does. Yeah, I love Jesse Plemons. I love Jesse Plemons. I remember him showing up in, what did I see him in? Black Mirror. That was when I first saw Jesse Plemons.
Oh, okay.
Cause I wasn't a Breaking Bad person.
Yeah. Or a Friday Night Lights person.
I was not a Friday Night Lights person. So yeah, the first time I saw him was in Black Mirror, and then I would have seen The Post, and then, yeah, and then Game Night, and then Vice, and then The Irishman, and yeah, he's just great.
Great actor.
He's so good.
What did I want to tell you? I saw a tweet that kind of made me think about this movie for a while. Someone said, yeah. I wish that Leonardo DiCaprio played Jesse Plemons' part. I wish Jesse Plemons played Leonardo DiCaprio's part in this movie.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, I think any issues that I had with the movie, I think a lot of it would have been solved if Jesse Plemons was this character. But after rewatching it yesterday, it was, nah, I disagree. Leonardo DiCaprio, good actor. Funny.
Leonardo DiCaprio is a good actor. I could have really gotten down with a Jesse Plemons leading this movie. I think that would have been really nice.
He has a, no offense to Jesse Plemons, but worse for the movie. He has a kind of a dopey face. He has a face that you can trust, but also is not trusting.
It fits both ways. Mean. Yeah. Yeah. I just love Jesse Plemons. He's great. Yeah. Then we have Robert De Niro, William Hale.
One of our greatest actors may be giving the best performance of his career. And it's absolutely such a good performance. I did see the other day that he said he can never play Trump because there's no humanity in Trump.
Yes.
Just like, forget William Hale. So many characters that he has played. Travis Bickle, Cape Fear, Godfather.
But no, it's this one.
But Donald Trump, he can never do. I don't like Trump either, but
it's, yeah, that was very funny. But yeah, absolutely, I agree. One of the best, given his best.
It is such, and I wonder after this. I just wonder what conversations did him and Martin Scorsese have. Because they've known each other since they were six, so they know each other. Mm-hmm. So are they like, yeah, we said some bad things to some people when we were 16. It's all coming home to roost in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I would, because it really, that to me, is, especially in regards to a Robert De Niro's performance, I feel this, like, guilt that they have. There's a guilt that maybe they're making this movie, that maybe the whole conceit. I mean, Martin Scorsese is definitely, the way this movie ends, to me, feels like he's like, yeah, I'm no different than any podcaster. Any podcaster who's tried to break down murders. any of those. There's something. Do you get what I'm trying to say? You get what I mean?
I get what you mean in terms of, like, the movie. I don't know if it's guilt.
Melancholy?
I mean, I think that it doesn't feel guilty. It feels more just, like, acknowledging, like, hey, like, I'm part of the history of, like, kind of telling this sort of story. Ooh. And, like, I don't know. The movie, I think what I really love about the ending with Marty coming out is that he's acknowledging that he is, like, integral to it, and also kind of saying, like, I don't know where I stand. I don't know exactly how I feel about it. And that was what was really getting me about it. I never really picked up a guilty sort of feeling from the movie or from De Niro's performance.
Ooh-hoo.
It felt more just like, to me at least, that it was like kind of ambiguous, kind of like, yeah, I'm part of this. I did this. Is that good? Is that bad? I'm telling these stories, but do they deserve to be told differently? Should other people be telling them? Should we be telling them at all? It's kind of like this weird open-ended question almost of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And that's what I really loved about it. But I could understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Who's next? Who's next?
Lily Gladstone.
Lily Gladstone.
Just, holy shit, her performance is so good. She's just like the heart of this movie.
The empathy.
She gets to.
The empathy.
Yeah, she gets to. She gets to deliver such powerful moments with like such. Like intimate detail.
Yeah.
She's doing these small little things that you're just like, oh wow, this is really captivating. It's really, I think without a performance like this from Lily Gladstone, I think this movie would kind of fall apart. Like, you need someone who's really, really good in this role to make this movie like
work
what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as you leave Lily Gladstone stuff and it's more focusing on DiCaprio and De Niro and kind of what they're doing when she's sick and she's in bed for that, like, kind of back half-ish, you kind of feel like the movie, I think on purpose, kind of feels like very cold and very, like, jaded. And very just like, these people are not good. And that's exactly, they are horrible people. And then when it pulls you back to Lily Gladstone, you're like, oh, this is like where the warmth and the heart and the love is coming from. Right?
One thing,
it's not coming from DiCaprio. It's not coming from De Niro. It's coming from Lily Gladstone.
Mm-hmm. It really is. One thing, because I know there are a few people that I've talked to who have this opinion, who are like, I didn't like the movie because why did they portray her as such an idiot? Like, it's so obvious that her husband is doing something bad. Why is she an idiot in this movie? It's kind of offensive and rude that she's an idiot. And it's like, she's an idiot. She's an idiot for believing and trusting her husband would do no harm to her. She is, she's believing that, she's not, no. The revolution will not be televised live. The revolution that they're talking about is in your mind.
Yeah.
He's wrong.
It's also like we have access to information that she doesn't have access to. We're seeing scenes that she doesn't see. We also are not seeing scenes that like her character would have had conversations with Ernest about stuff that's going on. Also,
like, abusive relationships exist. Like, are you going to tell every person who's in, like, a shitty relationship, like, oh, why didn't you just leave? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, shit is weird. Brains are weird. Stuff is weird, okay? Shut the fuck up a little bit.
A little bit, he said.
Just a little.
Us bringing up Leonardo DiCaprio and talking about Lily Gladstone, do you think they were in love? Do you think he loved her? Do you think she loved him?
Yes, I do. I think the scene in the courtroom at the end where John Lithgow is like, did you marry Molly Burkhart because your uncle told you to? And when he says, no, I didn't. We got married because I picked her up in my cab and we fell in love and that's what happened. I think that is Ernest being honest. I think Ernest is so incompetent, and I think Ernest is such an idiot that he didn't really realize that his uncle was trying to push him into doing this. Mm-hmm. I think he really did just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go pick up some people in my cab, and then we fell in love, and then we got married, you know? I think that is honest. I think that is true. Because I think this movie, if he doesn't love her, I think this movie is a lot less interesting also. Right. I think that's just a more boring choice to have it just be, oh, this is all a, you know, this is all a trick. This is all a mind game.
I love money as much as I almost love my wife. He says something along those lines. Yeah.
And I think that, like, I think the love that they have for each other is what drives the story a lot. And I don't think that the movie would be as powerful if they didn't truly love each other.
Yeah.
You know? And the line that Lily Gladstone has that I love this line so much. Yeah, she says towards the end of the movie, I had a dream that you told me all your secrets and I put them in a box to keep them safe and I sent them down the river so that they would never hurt us. I think that, like, that captures their relationship, like, so well of, like, oh, they love each other. Like, they really do have that weird little love. And he fucks it all up. Like, he ruins everything. But their love is so true that that is just, like, beautiful.
There's something so human about it because it's people cheat. Like, obviously, yeah. Of course, people are in horrible, physically abusive, mentally, verbally abusive relationships. Mm-hmm. But also just like any relationship, like, is hard. Is that the Oppenheimer thing that people just can't get it? Some people just can't. I make a bomb. People die. Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
I lie to my wife, you know, I lie. I said I went to the shoe store, but really I went to the smoke shop. Slippery slope. Slippery slope.
Slippery slope.
You lie about the shoe store one day, then all of a sudden you're putting poison in her insulin.
Yeah.
Slippery slope.
Slippery slopes.
It's...
You get spanked by your uncle one time.
To not leave him, you know, out. Leonardo DiCaprio. I thought when I first saw this movie, he was good. After watching it again, he is great. He is really good. At first, I was like, he's playing him too stupid. He's too much like a cartoon villain. Welcome back, classics. Way back in the day, one of my few issues with Black Klansman, I remember talking about on the podcast, was that they all felt kind of, oh, we're racist. Oh, we're dumb racist. And there was a little bit of me that felt that way with Leonardo DiCaprio, but not anyone else in the movie. Especially, I think, Robert De Niro is like the complete opposite. That's what you should be striving for when you're making a racist character. But watching Leo now, I really got the innocence almost. I get why it's I get why it's Jack. It had to be Jack from Titanic who's playing this. It had to be Romeo. It had to be that guy.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I totally get what you mean. Yeah, I love I feel kind of similarly. I think when I first saw this, I wasn't in love with DiCaprio's performance, but it's grown on me over time, rewatching it and seeing it. And I think it's also like, I think it strengthens De Niro's performance by having DiCaprio be kind of this like incompetent idiot the entire time, who's so easily manipulated by De Niro, so that you can see how like maniacal De Niro is as that horrible racist,
right,
who's killing the Osage people, like, by using these people who you know, just trust him. And he's just like, oh yeah, I trust my uncle, I'm just gonna do what my uncle says,
right,
blah blah blah.
It really,
he's not really thinking through it. I don't know if Ernest Burkhart, like, he is a racist, but I don't know if he is, like, deep down a racist. You know what I mean?
I was about to say. It kind of
feels like other people are telling him to be racist, so he's like, oh, I guess my uncle told me to be racist, so I'll be racist. But it's not like he has those thoughts on his own. It's like, it's all stuff that other people have told him to think, and he's just like, yep, all right, that's what I believe.
What I would say is that it is symbolic of what systematic racism is. It is,
yeah,
he is the system. Robert De Niro, William Hell,
yeah,
he makes sure and puts out things done solely because of race, solely because these people, it was a bunch of white people who had that land, we'd be talking about a different thing. It's what I was telling Kelly when we were watching it. I was like, it's just the levels of racism. It's funny that they have such a big heist and a big plot, a murder plot, to get this money. But just a few miles away in Tulsa, they were dragging black people out by their hair, putting on their coat and going, now this is my business. All right, everybody, how can I help you today? Like, it was the levels of it. To me, it is, William Hell is the... just the system, but Leonardo DiCaprio, Ernest, he is just like the everyday racism. The race, like, of course, people aren't like, oh, I'm not gonna hire you because you're black. No, I'm not gonna hire you because of X, Y, and Z, because of the dreads in your hair. You know, dreads are presentable, it's because the way you talk. That's not, what school did you go to? Oh, why did you go to that school? Because you couldn't afford anything else. It sounds like you didn't work hard enough. That's Ernest. That is
That's Ernest. Yeah.
Like, oh, wait, not because you're black, it's because of these other things. It is. And then Lily Gladstone's just hoping. Just sitting there hoping.
Just sitting there hoping.
Come on, man. You're gonna make me look so stupid from every. Come on, man. There's a but when she's sick in bed, she's kind of like, oh, please don't. I've been telling everybody for weeks that it's gonna be Paul Giamatti. Please. Please, Lord.
That is so. I think that's a really great way to put it. Yeah, I had connected William Hale to the systemic racism, but Ernest Burkhart really is representing that everyday, like, quote unquote casual racism.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, oh yeah, that just kind of happens. And then everyone's just kind of like, what?
He did love her. He could also love a dog. Like,
it's so, so wild. What a movie. What a picture.
What did Martin Scorsese, that's the thing between Wolf of Wall, his last four movies, which has really, he's always been Martin Scorsese. He's always been Martin Scorsese. Quick little story. Quentin Tarantino heard a story from Brian De Palma that Brian De Palma was making Scarface, I want to say, and he was like, this is it. I'm going to be one of America's greatest filmmakers ever. He was like finishing a few things in the editing room. And he went out and he saw Raging Bull. And the opening scene is in black and white, in the ring, Robert De Niro hopping up and down in slow motion. And Brian De Palma was like, oh man. They told Quentin Tarantino, he said, no matter how good you think you are, no matter how special you think you are, no matter how great the film you make is, there's always Scorsese. There's always Scorsese.
Yeah. Yeah, man. He's just too good.
He's just...
His smoke too tough. His swag too cool. They'll kill him.
What is that?
It's a... It's a meme, and it's just... Your smoke too tough. Your swag too cool. Your bitch too bad. They'll kill you.
Is it the damn Daniel kid? Is it the same person?
No, this is I don't know. It was just a thing on Twitter for a long time, and it's very funny. Mm-hmm. People were making jokes about recently about Leto Atreides, Oscar Isaac.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, canonically, his smoke too tough, his bitch too bad. They killed him.
That's actually true, isn't it? That's actually completely true, huh?
Yeah.
Spoilers for Dune Part 1.
Yeah, but his bitch too bad, his smoke too tough. They killed him.
Someone I knew, someone I worked with, was like, I did see the first Dune. What happened to Oscar Isaac? Wasn't he in the other Dune? I said, gotta watch Dune Part 1.
Gotta watch Dune Part 1.
They really got him.
Yeah.
They really got him like they got my girl Lily.
Yeah. But yes, Martin Scorsese also wrote it with Eric Roth and directed, of course, Martin Scorsese. Yeah, absolutely. One of the best. Like, the best to ever do it. It's insane how good he is at movies. I said this, like, yeah, my quick little anecdote. I saw this movie with my grandma when it was in theaters. It was a lovely little afternoon. We went to go see it. And as I was watching it, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this movie. I was kind of like, I'm enjoying it. There's good stuff. These performances are great. Lily Gladstone, DiCaprio, De Niro.
The front is the back.
How hard is that? It's great. Was enjoying it generally, but I wasn't sure what Scorsese was like saying with the movie. So I was like, it's Scorsese. He's got like layers on layers of stuff that he's saying with these movies. I'm no fool.
There's some directors where you're like, there's no way he didn't just make this just cause.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it and I'm just like, man, I really don't know how I feel about this. I don't know what Scorsese is saying with this movie. And then you get to the end and you get this weird true crime show that's happening. And I suddenly like perked up in my seat. Like I was like sitting, I was like leaning back and suddenly that happened. And I kind of like leaned forward and I was like, okay, something's happening. Oh, we're doing something. Oh, this is where it is. I'm going to get the good old Marty Scorsese fucking thing. And then when he comes out, when Martin Scorsese walks out to deliver Molly Burkhart's, not eulogy. What is it? Obituary.
Yes.
And he reads it and he says there was no mention of the murders. I was like, it like all clicked. And I was like, oh, Martin Scorsese is the only person who understands how movies work.
Yeah.
Martin Scorsese is the only person who knows the power of cinema, like the true power of this art form. He is the guy who gets it. And I love all these other directors, Spielberg, Nolan, you know, all the greats that we've talked about for so long, but no one does it like Scorsese. Like no one does that.
There's always Scorsese. There's
always Scorsese.
Give him his flowers. He's going to die one day. Give him his flowers.
He's going to die one day.
He's going to die. Then people are going to go, hey, did you know how good Silence is? Did you know how good The Irishman was? Wow.
Wow.
Because Christopher Nolan did make the best movie.
Yeah, you're sitting there and as if you hate Oppenheimer, was and you're good. Like, and you're like, man, Parasite and Oppenheimer were fucking good though. yeah, just that moment at the end really just so beautiful. Yeah, I think this is this. I mean, honestly, every time a fucking other, I don't like The Irishman, but every time, and I don't really like Silence, but every time a Scorsese movie comes out and somebody says, that's Scorsese's best, I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah, right?
Like, you can't. If someone is like, oh yeah, I think Killers of the Flower Moon is Scorsese's best, I'd be like, yeah, sure, that makes sense.
But it's what?
I get it.
Right, it's, Silence is like designed for you not to like.
It's designed for me specifically not to like that
but
movie.
But even though you're still like, but he's got the sauce.
He's got the sauce. That movie is very well made. The performances are really good. I love the design of it. I love the Scorsese-ness of it. I just think that story is fucking stupid. But that movie is still good. I just don't like it. It's the best movie I hate.
The alternate title of this podcast. with the last four movies, with Wolf of Wall Street, with Silence, with Irishman, and with Killers of the Flower Moon, it's that Catholic guilt. It feels like he's like trying to exorcise demons out of himself.
Yes, he does. Yeah,
I am too excessive. Let me make a whole movie about it. I don't know about my faith. Let me make a movie about it. Maybe violence does. Movie violence does call real world violence. Maybe it is all my fault. I don't know. Maybe I am just a big racist. Misogyny, racism. It's all me.
It's all me. It's crazy. Yeah, I love. He's so willing to like unpack his own shit in these last few movies, and I think it's something that, like, even if for some reason you don't like Scorsese, which is a crazy sentence for someone to say,
yeah,
I think you have to respect what kind of an artist he is, that he is so willing to be like, yeah, maybe, yeah, I don't really know what I feel about my faith. So I'm going to go make a movie about it, and I'm going to see if maybe I can get an answer. And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. We don't know how he feels after making that movie. Mm-hmm. Maybe my legacy of violence in these films has caused real world issues. And maybe that's true. I don't really know. I'm going to make a movie about it. Oh, maybe the legacy of racism and American history and
the original sin landing on like a place that is not yours and claiming it's yours.
Yeah. Maybe that really, like, where do I fall in that? I'm going to go make a movie about it. I think that's such a, like, instead of shying away from these topics that are kind of scary and I'm sure for him very, like, nerve-wracking. This is always, like, these are movies, he's writing these movies, he's directing these movies. Like, he is cutting his heart out and showing it to us every time. I think that is so, so insanely respectable and just admirable to be like, oh, that's like Martin Scorsese is the type of artist that I think everyone else should strive to be in how much he is willing to put to rip his heart out of his chest and show it to you.
Right. And any art.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's just stunning. It's so inspiring. Like it's so amazing to watch and see. And, you know, he's so fucking old and he's still just like, he's not phoning it in for a second.
No!
Like, even a little bit. He's just showing up and doing the work and doing his thing. And I love that.
The last movie, really, the last movie he made for fun, it felt like it was Shutter Island. That was the last movie he made just for the kicks. Just for the freaks in the back. Then he made Hugo. Then he made Wolf of Wall Street. Then Silence, Irishman, this just back to back to back to back.
It's crazy. And also, like, made King of Comedy and Taxi Driver,
right? He had a whole career.
Raging Bull.
like had a whole lucrative career that if he stopped making movies in the 90s, everyone would have been like one of the best to ever do it. Martin Scorsese, absolute GOAT, one of the best forever.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But here he is, 2023, releasing another fucking banger and still doing good shit. That's crazy.
pour one out for Marty.
Fucking like, yeah, 50 years into making movies.
What do you like?
He's been making movies for like half as long as movies have existed.
Really? Truthfully.
That's crazy.
With the four movies that we've mentioned, how do you think, because it's, to me, maybe I'm just crazy, it's clear that from Tenet you get to Oppenheimer, that Nolan's always kind of had Oppenheimer and the atomic bomb on the mind since Dark Knight Rises, really.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, Dunkirk, Tenet. Oppenheimer. Makes sense.
Yeah.
There's another person I want to use it for an example, but David Fincher. Makes sense. Who works with Netflix, does House of Cards. He made Mank, and they made The Killer. Then he made...
He made Mindhunter.
Yeah, you're right. Mindhunter.
Mindhunter is so good. Shout out Mindhunter. That show should come back for its final season.
And now we have.
But yeah, you can draw a clear line for the last, 10-15 years of Fincher to The Killer. You can get from like Nolan into Oppenheimer. Like, you can see these lines. You can be like, okay, I understand.
What do you think Martin Scorsese's journey has been? He has a young daughter. Is it seeing the world through her eyes? Does he hate this world so much? Is he nostalgic for the past? Does he miss his homies?
I don't know if he hates this world. I think part of it is like seeing his daughter grow up and seeing how the world has changed and seeing how, I think that's kind of it is, He's been, as I just said, he's been making movies for half as long as movies have existed. He's seen it all. Like, he's seen so much. He's seen the people rise and fall. He's seen comebacks. He's seen all these different things. And I think he's just still been here. And I think the line that we can draw from, like, Wolf of Wall Street, Silence, Irishman, Killers of the Flower Moon, is that like self-examination of like, I've been around for so long. What does that mean? Where do I stand in the history of movies? Where do I exist in that? What is my impact on it?
Some might say, what was I made for?
What was I made for? Yeah, so I think that's kind of his line. You know, it's not really... Because he's just... It's not like he's doing... It's not like... I don't think he's in, like, turmoil over his career. Because, like, Nolan and Fincher, they've been doing movies for a long time, but they haven't been doing movies as long as Scorsese has. I think Scorsese is kind of in this, like, twilight of his career, just because he's so fucking old, that he's just like, I've done my thing. I've done this. Huge, successful, lucrative.
I found my powerful voice career five times over.
Yeah, so now it's just him, kind of as a master of his craft, just continuing to dig deeper into himself to like find all of this stuff, and also the world around him, digging into like systemic racism and the religious trauma and how that treats people and the legacy of violence that he and other filmmakers have left on the world. You know, I think that's what he's doing as just like being the master that he is. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Nolan and Fincher are still kind of in the midst of their career. You know, Fincher's not going to retire anytime soon. Nolan's not going to retire anytime soon. You know?
Yeah.
They're kind of... They're just kind of doing their thing. They're in the middle of, like... They've made names for themselves. They're very successful. They're incredible at what they do. But they're not Scorsese. They're not Spielberg. They're not, you know... They haven't been doing this forever.
Can I bring up someone you hate in a movie that I was thinking about while watching? Someone you hate in a movie I know you don't hate. I was thinking a lot about Django Unchained. And this movie, I've kind of had an epiphany. You know how sometimes you're just drunk and you're thinking about movies, and a movie just like cracks the code.
I've been around you when that's happened. I've been at a bar and you've turned to me and been like,
out of nowhere, I was just
thinking about this movie. I was just thinking about The Land Before Time. You ever think about
that's funny. But one thing that I think, and Leonardo DiCaprio is in both of these movies, I think Django Unchained is really about how white people deal with racism. It's not about Django at all.
It's barely about Django. Like, Django's there, but it's not Django's thing. It's
the pivotal moment of shake my hand. I want you to shake my hand. He can, Christoph Waltz can shake his hand and be over. It'd be done. Everyone would ride off into the sunset. He could have a brost, a turkey brost, sausage broth. I don't know what they, he's German. I don't know. But he couldn't do it. And that's, he couldn't, even knowing that this would ruin Django's life, all the hard work that they both went through, he couldn't resist. That's kind of the purpose of that movie. And that's Quentin Tarantino trying to figure his own racism out and his own impact on the world with race. I think with Martin Scorsese, it's also that, but in such a low-key way, in such a subdued way. Even though this movie's almost an hour longer than Django Unchained.
Yeah, this movie is 3.5 hours long. Like, we can't ignore the scale of this film.
Yeah. It made you think, like, is there a 6-hour cut? Like,
do you want to watch a 6-hour cut?
No, who would? Would Martin Scorsese want to?
Fucking sickos.
Oh, this is sad.
Sickos like you. Sickos like you would want to watch a 6-hour version of Killers of the Flower Moon.
It's this... It's just a filmmaker just making this... Why am I like this? Why am I... You're not going to kill me. Oh, what are you talking about? You guys are going to kill me. What?
What?
No, no, we're not. No. What are you talking about? Go sit on this rock. Hold her up. Hold her up. It's... Why do I lie? Not just why do I lie. Why do I lie and I know I'm doing something bad and I know it's bad and I still do it? I do love her. I'm happy with my wife and kids. This is where what I think love in a lot of great movies, Best Picture winner included, it's so much deeper than just racism. It's so much deeper than the atomic bomb. It's so much deeper than a plastic ball. Doll. It is, why am I like this as a human? Why am I willing to hurt other people? Why am I willing to betray other people? Why do I not care about what people think? Why do I care so much about what people think? It is this such raw human feeling. I think I've said on the podcast here before why I love about this movie. It's just about that fear of your neighbor coming over and hitting you over the head with a rock. Like, and why would that person do that? It is, he's so good. Movies!
He's so good.
He's so good. Human feelings!
Yeah. It's the movie magic, man. It's so good. I'm sure we could talk about this movie more, but I think that's a good place to end.
It's a good place.
Yeah, I like that little speech. I, you know,
the ineffable humanity of art is wonderful. And I loved how you said it. So I don't want to, I don't want to ruin it. You know, I don't want to.
I'm Andrew Thomas.
I'm Sam Bannigan. Thanks so much for tuning in to the podcast. You can find the podcast all over the place at Welcome Back Pod.
Yeah. I've tried to do the score.
Oh, okay. I was like, what's happening? Our Linktree is still Linktree.com/WelcomeBackPod. You can find the links to all our different social medias on there. All the different podcatchers of your choice. Like the track, review the track, like the podcast, review the podcast. All the different things on all the different podcatchers. Helps the show out a whole heck of a lot. But as always, Andrew will tell you the absolute best way to support our little show.
First, shout out to Robbie Robertson. R.I.P. Go. He scored the movie.
Yeah.
Also part of the band. Bob Dylan's The Band.
Oh, wow.
And when you're with your band, hopefully you're not doing heinous stuff like in this movie, hopefully. but hopefully you're chilling with the homies, chilling with the wife and kids, and you're listening to us. Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Listen, watch the movie, and then come back and listen to us, and then tell your friends, because that is truly the best way to get the word out.
It's so true. And, I got nothing else. I thought I had a bit, and I didn't. So, goodbye.